Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tarr is back. Yay! And Sascha Ludwig from Germany is our guest. He's a system integrator, software designer, IT system administrator, and he's got a fantastic looking studio. We're going to meet Sascha Ludwig coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com.
By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com.
And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb. Where is it? Is it? Oh, it's off. Oh, my goodness. I got to figure out why that thing is off. My light bulb's off. Oh, jeez. So I better put
You've
a no-tam
that for
in
years.
For that.
You've been saying your light bulb's been off for years.
Exactly. I wonder why. I gotta go kick it and see what's wrong. Okay, maybe during a commercial break, I'll kick it if we get it back on. And then I don't have to call the NOTAM. It can be off for 20 minutes, right, without having to call in. I'm Kirk Harnack. So glad you're here. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, where it's a typical November day. It's cold. And we've had rain for a week. It's finally cleared out today. I had some bad thunderstorms and even some tornadoes in southeast Louisiana over the past couple of days, but a lot of that's cleared out now and headed over toward the East Coast. And that's your weather report from Nashville. I'm looking forward to a good hour ahead, though, because one of my favorite people in the world is here, and that is Chris Tarr. Chris, welcome in. Good to see you.
Good to be back. Just getting over a bout of pneumonia that knocked me out for a while here. So still taking it kind of slow, but I'm glad to be out of bed and moving around. Weather out here is pretty nasty. I'm actually... part of my day here, I've been dealing with a couple of our stations being off the air and sending people out to triage, and we've got icing everywhere. So it's been a little nastier there. We've got some rain and kind of chilly, but you know what? I'm alive and I'm here. And so that's what I'm going to celebrate.
Good deal. Well, I'm glad you're here. I've been missing you a lot because, you know, when you're here, I can snooze a bit during the show, but when you're not here, I got to be awake for the whole thing. So, glad you're here.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, let's bring our guest in. Our guest is a fellow who I met about 5 years ago, Sascha Ludwig from Germany. Sascha, welcome in. It's good to see you.
Hi, Kirk. And hi, Chris.
Sascha, you're coming in from your studio. It's called Astra Studio. Tell us, what in the world is Astra Studio?
Astra Studio is my small little company. I create software for broadcast environments and do system integration and stuff like that. And also a little bit of music production, voiceover, something like that.
Okay, so you're in the thick of it, and you produce software, and you know exactly what it does because it's for an industry that you're in, right?
Yes, yeah. And this is also a purpose of the studio, is to test everything out and see what's really needed in the software place and to connect all the bits and bytes together.
Well, we have an expression that kind of describes that situation. That is, you eat your own dog food.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You always should do that.
That's right. And Sascha, you also have, and the way I met you at an IBC convention was regarding virtualization. And you had even 5 years ago, you had some very positive things to say about virtualization and how efficient it could be. And at the time I wasn't unsure about it, but there's a lot of things I didn't know, still a whole lot I don't know. Give us a little foretaste of what you're going to talk about today in virtualization of broadcast systems.
I guess everyone who's watching this one here is a little bit aware of what virtualization actually means. So we might have a look into what can virtualization do for you, like cost savings or increased scalability, better disaster recovery, or even increased flexibility.
Yep. Yep, all those things. And Chris Tarr has some things to add to that, too, because of the nature of the company that he works with, Magnum Media. And, of course, I work with the folks at the TELUS Alliance. And so we're working on, and we've had several products out for a while now that let you virtualize some aspects of your broadcast facility. So Sascha Ludwig also is an expert in IT. He's been an IT system admin for some years, and he has a lot of experience with security in IT. So when we build these systems that are accessible by the right people from different places, we've got to make sure they're not being accessed by the wrong people or people with mal intent. We're going to get up to all that in just a minute here as we move along. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by our friends at Nautel. And Nautel is, you know, they have their Transmission Talk Tuesdays. They got one more Transmission Talk Tuesday coming up this coming Tuesday. It's going to be Tuesday. Is that the 20th? Is that the date of this one? I think it is. Let's see. Do I have that date right? Yeah. Okay. Thanks. It's coming up on the 20th. You want to go register for this one. It's their holiday season recap. That's what Jeff Welton is calling this episode of Transmission Talk Tuesday. So it should be fun, a little joyous. Hey, you know, bring a hot apple cider along and enjoy it. It's going on this coming Tuesday around noon for those on the East Coast. I think it's about 11 a.m. for me and later in the day for you on the West Coast so late in the evening for people like Sascha Ludwig in Germany. Go to nautel.com/webinars and then click on Transmission Talk Tuesday, and you can register right there to join this one that's coming up. Now, it's not a webinar. It is, even though it's in the webinars section of Nautel, it's not a webinar. It's a roundtable discussion. Now, they might have an expert. Sometimes they do. But this one coming up should be just a lot of jovial fun, and you might learn something, too. I usually do. I always do whenever I join this thing. The holiday season recap, nautel.com/webinars for Transmission Talk Tuesday with Jeff Welton. And it's going to have some guests. Let's see. Special guest panelists. Okay. So maybe it'll be a surprise. While you're on the Nautel site, take a moment and look at the different resources that they have for us as broadcast engineers. A lot of videos, of course, past episodes of Transmission Talk Tuesday. They do have some webinars there you can look at to find out about servicing your transmitter, updating the software in it, even some of the newer things that are being worked on, like getting FM and HD together over IP and having backup facilities. That's involved with virtualization. So you'll find also, if you log in at the Nautel website, you have access to all the things like manuals and quick start guides and things like that. Whole selection of AM and FM transmitters and digital radio too at nautel.com. So thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hope to see you there. All right. Chris Tarr is with me. I'm Kirk Harnack, and Sascha Ludwig is here. Sascha, I'm not really sure where to start. Why don't we start where you and I started talking 5 years ago at the IBC convention in Amsterdam, where I asked you, okay, what's the real benefit of virtualizing broadcast infrastructure, not having purpose-built boxes, but doing these functions, whether it's audio processing or playout or phone systems or audio mixing or codecs, putting them into server-grade hardware and using that. Give us your thoughts about that topic, if you would.
Yeah, I guess we started really quick over there. You pulled out a camera. I remember it really clearly. You pulled out the camera and said, hey, come on, tell me something about virtualization. What do you think about it? And then we got pretty quickly deep into the material, I think. And I guess the last years it changed a lot. The adoption rate of the radio guys using more and more virtualized stuff like broadcast processing, or just for the playout PCs or something like this. So I think it emerged quite a lot, and it got more important over the last 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Yeah, so in the last 2 or 3 years, companies, well, like TELUS Alliance, my employer, and I know there's another couple of companies that have done this too, have come out with this notion of containerization. And if I could have your thought on, you know, what's the difference between containerization, containerized software, and running software in virtual machines? Does this make sense to you to go this direction?
Yes, we could clearly talk about that. Virtualizing things is to take the whole environment you have and put it into something that is virtualizing the or emulating the hardware side, if you want so. So you can use like a normal desktop PC, get all the operating system stuff together and put it in a virtualization environment. And the containerization, for example, Docker, is using a little bit a smaller approach. So you do not virtualize all the hardware, but just a part of the software. So there's one funny joke about that. So the tech guy says, you got a problem with this software, but it runs on my machine. And then the other guy said, okay, then we ship your machine. So basically that's containerization.
But we're shipping awesome. You a virtual machine. Hey, just occurred to me, Chris Tarr, you weren't on my conversation with Sasha yesterday. And Sasha, let me ask Suncast to give you full screen. Can you switch cameras and give us a quick tour of your studio there? Is that possible?
Yes, of course. Yes. Which angle would you like to see? Angles?
All of them, just not at once.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So this is
look at that, Chris.
Yeah, this is the camera over there.
That's
so it's
amazing.
Just I can give you a tour if you want a little bit.
Please do. Yeah.
So yeah, we got some XAIQ console over here with some 8-failure module and the main module. Over there at this part, all the outboard stuff, microphone processing, digital router, the XAIQ core 32 and something like this. Normally over there, there's a second guy sitting over there doing radio with me, but now it's this camera. This one here.
Uh-huh.
And you also get this shot. You might have seen it in the picture you posted online. Yeah, was this one over there. Yeah. So sure enough. You can also see some of the equipment on the floor here in the cases. And yeah, that's basically where I do things and create stuff, content.
Now, you told me that you write some software for broadcasting, and okay, you've got a couple of features there in your studio. You showed me one of them yesterday, and this was the framing around your desk-mounted console. I guess you'd call it flush-mounted. Why don't you walk us through that?
I can just do a quick zoom in so you can see it over here.
All right.
So. Yeah, that's the first thing you notice. This is a flush mount, and I also added LED stripes around it. So those are RGB LEDs. And they switch according to the studio state. So if I press the off button here from a microphone, you see it will turn white and you can't hear me any longer. Or, for example, if the phone rings, it will flash a green. Or if someone's at the door actually ringing the bell, then it's purple. So, yeah, you can use this to visualize it in the studio and not being interrupted by some ding-dong or some brrrr.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. And isn't that cool, Chris?
I love that. I love the meter bridge. On the countertop.
Okay.
From the IQ, that's awesome. Yeah, that is really slick.
Those are custom 3D printed stands over here, which fit into the curved bottom side of this one. Yeah, and then it's just extending the ribbon cable through the desk to the main unit.
Wow. That is really cool.
See, I thought you had to break the meter bridge to take it off of the console, but obviously you don't have to break it.
No. There are two screws. You just loosen them, and then you can take the thing apart.
Wow, that's beautiful. Now, on the left-hand side, you showed us the faders for the IQ console, and then you've got a third-party little controlling device just beyond that. What was that device?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what is that?
That's this one, I guess. You're referring to that one.
Yeah.
It's hooked up. It's a Behringer MIDI controller, and it's hooked up to my vMix setup here. So for switching cameras, so I have the preview cameras down here. So this is here. This is the back feed, which is active, so I can see you. And actually, you're looking at my PTZ camera number one. Now you're looking at a test frame. And that's just a quick way for me to do everything at once over here. So yeah.
So what are some of the types of software that you write and put in radio stations?
I think the best known software is the on-air screen, which you can see over there in the back, I think. This is a radio clock, basically a radio clock with some lights you can switch on and switch off. You can do countdowns. You can have information on it. For example, what's the weather or something like this. And it's fully customizable in terms of colorization and font and styling. And you can add, if you want, multiple... Let me try to put to the right direction. It's actually a bit tricky over here. Yeah,
it is.
Can see those little lights over there. Mm-hmm. So this is my microphone counter. If I open the microphone, this one counts up and will tell me how long the microphone has been open and something like this. Those are some of the features I implemented in the software. And the finest thing is it's open source. So it's on GitHub and you can just download and use it. Or if you're not familiar with GitHub, you can come to my webpage and buy it for a small fee. So the pre-compiled binary for Windows, Linux, and Mac.
Wow.
But nice, if you're a tech guy and you can use all the bits and bytes and handle a computer, then you can totally download it for free.
That sounds like something Chris Tarr could do, but not me. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I could probably handle that, yeah.
Well, if you can master SNMP, you know
how to hold Git clone, then you're good to go, I think.
There you go. There you go. I'll maybe do one for you too, Kirk, just to help you out.
Yeah. Sasha, I wonder if I get your thoughts here. You do integration. You build radio stations and remodel radio stations. What are people asking for these days? In other words, what is a studio, an effective studio, looking like these days compared to maybe when you first got into the business of doing this?
Okay, what I realized is it's getting more and more cleaner. So the environment is cleaning up a little bit. It's not so cluttered and everything is full of stuff and something like this. And there's a monitor over here and 24 everywhere else. So it's just clearing up everything, I guess. And what I've not seen so far are touchscreens for doing radio shows. So replacing the actual faders, the actual hardware faders, I've not seen out of the labs. I'm not sure if this is ever going to be a thing, at least not for the usual radio shows. So I guess the talents, like if they have something to press to actually have a feeling and have a tactile feedback on where the button is on something like this.
Yeah, I've heard some of the same thing, but I've also heard other engineers, like our friend Alex Hartman, has put in touchscreens in a university setting where, you know, younger people, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, he put in touchscreens for them to use, and he says they're fine with a touchscreen. Chris Tarr, do you have any thoughts about touchscreens and us going in that direction?
Yeah, you know, I think the thought of touchscreens are great. And there's been a couple of instances where I set up the virtual mixer, I'm trying to remember the name of it now, for Axie, a soft surface, on a touchscreen. And, you know, people really like it. It's just that it's really hard on glass. People just don't, you have to look at what you're doing. You can't do it by feel. So some people like to have their, you know, look ahead and have their hands on the buttons and be able to press all the, you know, that feeling to it. Whereas with the touchscreen, you have to kind of make sure you're looking at the right thing and pushing and being a little more deliberate. But I think from the engineering and cost perspective, that, you know, it makes a lot of sense. We were able to make a console out of nothing. We had a, you know, we had an extra engine. You could do a vMix or whatever and create a Surface. So, you know, there's the good and bad. I think is the, you know, the people who are on the air still prefer something, you know, tactile, like we were just talking about, that they can touch and feel and, you know, have all the lumps on it and everything.
So let me ask this. If we, it's more and more consoles these days, and certainly the ones that are offered by TELUS Alliance, my employer, more of them have auto mix these days. And so even if you have a talk show going on or a round table with, you know, a couple of sports broadcasters or a morning show, that you just put one fader on and you can make others follow, right? You have a leader and some followers. And then those are all involved with an auto mix. And you can give weight, for example, to the host, the main host, so that if the host talks, it knocks the other people down by whatever amount you want them to. You can weight that host. I guess my point is that, you know, we used to ride gain a whole lot. We were very fingers on audio consoles. And if you use auto mix, and of course, if you're using an automation system, which also has control of the software audio console, turning things on when they're needed and off when they're not, you can get a fair amount of, I would call it manual automation, where your required button touches are much fewer, and yet you're going to get really good results. Sasha, have you experienced this yourself, this kind of operation?
Yes. I really love AutoMix. From the very first day on, this came to the Core 32 or the IQ consoles. I'm using it ever since, and I'm a big fan of the original Dugan AutoMixer hardware parts. And yeah, I really love that feature. So you just push your faders to zero level and let them stay there for the whole show. You don't have to worry about feedbacks or anyone or someone's being too loud or too silent or background noises or something like this. So this is that's really handy and really nice.
Chris, have you gotten to use any AutoMix consoles yet? I have not in an actual on-air environment.
I haven't either, and I think it's weird if you look at European users and studios and things, they're a lot more open to those kinds of changes. Whereas I find that in the domestic market in the US, there's still a lot of pushback about that. I've tried to set that up for some of the morning shows. They don't like it. It's not that it doesn't work. They like to have that control. They like to be able to have their hands on the faders and, you know, move them around. And I think just part of that is, I think that, you know, radio in the US has been so far behind with automation and, moving ahead with surfaces and consoles and gear like that, that there's still like a whole group of people on the air who just like the feeling of having the faders and having the controls and doing all these things. And in fact, you and I were talking about this, Kirk, where, you know, we're one of the few groups yet that still do or that are doing just-in-time voice tracking, where we will track right before the bit airs, just so that we can make sure it's perfect and, you know, everything is done well and there's no mistakes or whatever, so that the on-air product sounds flawless. And, you know, people are like, wow, you know, you don't have those, you know, spontaneous moments. But I think in a way, you know, that doesn't matter. And I think that more people are starting, you know, I know one guy who used to do an entire show on Vox Pro. He would do every break on Vox Pro, put it together and play it back while he was on the air. So, you know, we've been very slow to pick up on those things. And I think, you know, auto mixing is going to be one of those things that'll start to catch up once, you know, kind of once we get over that hump of trusting it. I guess that's a good way to put it. We don't trust that automation yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't entirely let the cat out of the bag, but my employer, TELUS Alliance, of course, we have some software-based audio consoles, and I got to interview some people who are using some beta versions, and one is a morning team that, because of an employment situation with a spouse, the morning team that was together for a couple decades got split up. And so now the guy that runs the board is literally 1,200 miles away from the guy who doesn't run the board, who's still at the station, or he can do it from home. And these couple of guys, Chris, they're your age. I mean, they're a couple of years younger than me, but I mean, they've been in radio for quite a while. And they told me that no, it's perfectly fine and natural to run the board on a touchscreen because they don't have to jockey the levels like they used to. You know, if you got mic processing and then your songs are at the right levels and you're not, you know how we used to talk over songs by dipping the music down on the pod. Cause that was kind of, some people overdid that and it sounded bad. These guys told me that it works perfectly fine for them to be on a touchscreen, well, literally 1,200 miles away.
I think a lot of that though has to do with, you know, making that initial dive and getting comfortable with it. I think that most everybody with this technology gets to be fine with it once they use it, but it's that whole, that's not what I'm used to. That's not what I like. Now, I did a glass surface for a couple of the guys that we did a live broadcast for, and they loved it. But again, it was one of those where they looked at it and first went, you know, just like every other new technology, you change a playout system or anything else. They all kind of go, oh, I'm not going to like that. I don't want to play with that. But then they start to get used to it and see that it actually is pretty effective and very helpful to what they're doing. So, you know, I think that what your story, you know, what you're talking about makes a lot of sense. I think it's just, we're so stuck in our ways that when we see something different, we're pretty leery. And then once we see that it actually works really, really well, then everybody's all in. You know, our staffs are all in with this just-in-time tracking and working from home and everything else, where they were a little bit like, well, you know, I'm going to miss being on the air live and da-da-da. And they actually don't anymore. They really like doing it this way.
Gotcha. Hey, we're talking to Chris Tarr and Sascha Ludwig from Germany, and we're going to be back in just a minute. I got to ask Sascha when we come back about the typical ages of the on-air talent in Germany. I'm wondering if it's, you know, similar to America. We have a few younger people, but a whole lot of older people. I don't know. We're gonna see what's going on there with that. Plus, Sasha's going to be telling us about IT security and how he's able to keep the right people accessing the gear remotely and the wrong people out. It's coming up soon. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcast by Onyx. And you talk about stuff that's going to help you produce a great radio show. Let's hear from them. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast-critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI, and incoming connections are visible to users along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
I got to tell you, this is the stuff here from Bionic, Broadcast Bionics at bionics.co.uk. Oh, they make some really nice things to make your job of making content easier and very natural. You pretty much do what you're doing now, but you get all these things brought to light, to surface, as they say, in front of you. And you get to talk about things that make a difference to your listeners. Also, put together clips, social media clips, easily for your listeners to enjoy and to share. So that really gets your station's word out. All right. Thanks a lot, Broadcast Bionics, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville. Chris Tarr is in his studio in Mukwonago, Wisconsin. And then also Sasha Ludwig is with us from Astra Studio in Germany. Sasha, what city are you in there in Germany?
It's near Cologne. It's called St. Augustine.
Ah, okay.
So it's in between Cologne and Bonn. So, yeah.
Would I interpret that as St. Augustine?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Gotcha. Good deal. All right. Well, Sasha, maybe you can expound a bit more on when you're working with a radio station and you're virtualizing some things, whether it's, you know, back end business systems or on air stuff. Talk to us about your implementation. You do this all on premises. What kind of servers do you like to use? You know, just tell us about your own process for implementing newer and newer technologies there.
So in the IT range, I'm quite often used to stuff like servers from HP, switches from Cisco, just to drop a few names here. Yeah, so mostly stuff from so well-built stuff that is going to last for, at least 10 years, so, or at least designed for that. And then in these days with virtualization, you just have to keep in mind that you buy one server or maybe two servers that do your virtualization offloading. And then you can have multiple virtual machines running on that. And so it's easy to scale up. So if you need more processing power, just add another machine to it. Or if you need more disaster recovery options, just add another machine and at a total different location, have them hooked up via fast internet connection, and then you're good to go. So this is going to be this is a lot easier than like 10 years ago, something like that. So I see the increased flexibility is I think is a very good point in this in virtualization and virtualizing all the stuff.
You know, conceptually, one thing that you and I talked about was that with an ordinary computer, a desktop computer, typically running an app or two at a time, you pointed out to me that this computer's spending a lot of time doing nothing. And if you'll just use a more robust computer, maybe one that has several cores in it, several CPU cores, and maybe dual power supplies, things that make the computer reliable, that you can load this computer up with a lot more work, and thereby your cost, you know, per thing that it's doing can actually go down. And that was the real benefit of servers. And frankly, 5 years ago, you kind of opened my eyes to this economic reality that making a more expensive computer do a lot more things, it was a good way to go. And, you know, I know people in IT get this. I hadn't thought this through at all at that time. You kind of opened my eyes to that. So with the possibility of a hypervisor, virtual machines, and now the possibility of containers, software containers, which are very efficient. You don't have, the whole overhead of an operating system for every single thing that you're doing. You can get by with one operating system running a number of containers. Give me your thoughts about that that kind of philosophy going forward, that we can get a lot done in one box.
Yeah, that's not only the thing that you can do more things in one box now. There's also the benefit of splitting things up. So you have a small part, like a container for one purpose, and you can really separate them all the containers from each other and only allow communication between those containers that need communication and only allow those protocols between the containers that need to be allowed. So you have a much more better separation when it comes to improved security. So in the old days, you had like one server with 20 services on it, and they could all talk to each other on the same device. They shared the same physical hard drive. And now you have some layers of abstraction around that. So you can fine-tune and really select what is written where and which memory areas some application could be could write to, and that helps a lot in improving security.
In your particular business, doing the installations that you do, are you finding that you're doing servers and equipment like this on premises at the radio station or in a data center, maybe in the area, or are you doing things with Amazon Web Services?
No, mostly we're doing on-premises things. So I guess it's most of the radio stations have big server rooms and something like this anyway. So they're really focusing on having it on site and having it, at their fingertips, so to say. If something goes wrong, they can just walk into the server room and see where the light is missing or where the red light is blinking. And it's kind of that those operators, those service operator, do have more control over the stuff if it's on site. So if you have something in the cloud, you don't know really where it is. You don't know where the bits lying around. And at least in a physical data center that you own, you can say, okay, if no one's coming over the digital way into my data center, I can assure that via firewalls and something like this, then it's pretty safe. Because if someone walks into this facility, then I will see that. So yeah, that's a nice benefit from not putting everything in the cloud. So there's a little funny line I heard back in the days when it started all with virtualization, and it's if it's too complicated, put it in the cloud so you don't see the complexity anymore, but the complexity is still there, and if it fails, you have to handle it and you have to deal with it. And if you know what can fail and if you know about the complexity, then it's a lot easier than just offloading something to some anonymous server farm.
Gotcha. Understood. And it's interesting. I mean, there's really valid arguments on either side of doing this. Some would argue that, well, the people who run server farms actually perhaps know more about servers and longevity and advanced parts replacement before a failure happens. And I don't know. I just, I go by what I hear people say that, hey, if you're not an expert on the hardware, we'll let somebody else handle the hardware. Now, there's still, if you do put radio station stuff in the cloud, you do have expenses for ingress and egress. You know, all the data going in, the data coming out, there's cost there. It's small per bit, but if you're doing 24/7 operations, you can run up a bill with the ingress and egress costs on top of the hosting costs themselves. So there may be arguments for either way, but certainly you make a good one for having your equipment on site. If you also take care of power and internet and things like that, an AWS is going to have a number of different sources of internet at their places. Again, you don't even know, where that data center is for sure. I wonder if you could talk to me about something else. 15 or more years ago, when I started dealing with some broadcasters in Germany, I was led to believe that the broadcasters don't really own the transmitter sites. That's a different company that takes care of that. And how has that changed at all? Or do you have really good connectivity between your studio and your transmitter? What does that look like these days?
It did not change much. So you're remembering quite right. Most of the TV towers and radio towers are here operated by a single company in Germany. So it's a subsidiary of Deutsche Telekom. So basically the thing you know as T-Mobile or something like this. So with the pink dots, the one. It's most of the sites are run by Deutsche Funkturm, I think it's called. So it's in very rare cases the company owns the transmitter side. So it's only in very small markets and small local stations where the transmitter is actually hooked up to some building or something like that. But usually it's the big companies that are running the transmitter side.
That's interesting. Something else that has, I wouldn't say become popular, but become an option here in the U.S. is actually putting your automation and maybe other equipment at the transmitter site. And in some cases, that has turned out to be the best option, especially during COVID lockdowns. Because maybe you weren't really sure about your studio transmitter link. Maybe the transmitter site had really good internet, as in some big cities, New York City. The late Chris Tobin actually moved their operations to the transmitter site when they had COVID lockdowns and everybody worked from home. And of my radio stations, I'm part owner of about 14 radio stations. One of our stations, it turned out the best way for us to operate one of them was to put the automation at the transmitter site. And we have great connectivity there. It happens to be the head end for a wireless ISP. So, we have good internet there. Is this ever a possibility in Germany, or have you seen this elsewhere, having a transmitter be the IT department, the IT center as well?
Not really. It's really common that you put the RDS signal generation in something like this at a transmitter site, because you want overlapping areas to have the neighbor frequencies programmed in the information. So that's a part where some of the equipment has moved to the transmitter site, but everything else mainly stays in the main studio. For the connection you asked about, it's mostly that we have very, very much copper lying around in this country from almost everywhere to everywhere. So ever since you could get a decent transmitter line for STL link via a copper, dedicated copper cable from one place to another, and transmit your analog audio over that, really reliable, and so no interference in something like this. So it's your own physical line to the transmitter. You can still have this these days, but I'm pretty sure most of the big radio stations moved to fiber and to dedicated fibers to the transmitter side. So yeah, Germany is not so big in comparison to the US, so it's a lot easier to run wires or fibers around the country.
Ah, yeah, gotcha. Hey, we're talking to Sascha Ludwig, and I promise you we're going to get to some of the IT security that he likes to implement. Chris Tarr is along with us. I'm Kirk Harnack in Nashville, Tennessee, and our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. And one of the lines that BGS carries is Henry Engineering. And this is the Henry Engineering Superlight. I know we've been talking about this for a while. You, as an engineer, you've probably used the Henry Super Relay to hook up your on-air light above the door, outside the door, maybe hook up a light inside the studio. Or maybe you've used the Henry Super Relay's extra relays to do something extra in the room, like mute the telephone. Or remember back in the day when you'd actually hook up the motor, the capstan motor on the cassette deck that they would use for telescoping, for doing air checks, hook that up to the super relay. Well, check out the Henry Super Light. It's the modern replacement for the super relay. The Henry Super Light is meant to run LEDs. So your LED on-air lights could be your lights on your microphone stand, like Sasha's got in his studio. You've got that ring light there. It also still has normally open and normally closed relay contacts built in the Henry Super Light. So you can still mute that telephone if you need to do something like that. Or hit a GPI on a recorder, a solid state recorder, if you need to do some recording. So the Henry Super Light, it's small, it's lightweight, and sure, you could build this yourself. Like so many Henry Engineering products, okay, that's something I could whip up myself. But once you get into it, you're not really whipping it up. Hank Landsberg at Henry Engineering has done a superlative job of understanding exactly what we broadcasters need, what we engineers need, and building it into his products. And the Superlight is no exception. There's another interesting benefit to the Superlight. So many facilities have several studios, and maybe you've got a central wiring area where all your cabling comes back to. Well, the Henry Superlight can make it super easy to take your contact closures out of maybe some GPIO board or GPIO device, maybe that's on your audio over IP network. Like, for example, with Axia Livewire, you've got these GPIO nodes. Well, you can come out the back of that and wire several closures, up to four closures, into a single cable. It would be a Cat5 style cable, and then just use RJ45 connectors to connect to your Superlight, and then daisy chain them, because inside each Henry Superlight, there are some jumpers that let you set the address, if you will, of each of these four boxes. That's shown on the screen there. And so you can easily wire these things up for control and save yourself just a bunch of wiring and make it a little easy on yourself. So the Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller, it's part of a whole range of products from Hank Landsberg at Henry Engineering, from headphone volume controls, talent pods, sports pods, little mixers, USB in and out, just all kinds of products, including the whole line of surge suppressors from Henry Engineering. These are pretty cool. The power clamps, and they're sophisticated. They do the job needed, and they're actually more accurate than a lot of the other TVSS style surge suppressors that are out there. Hank Landsberg latched onto this power clamp technology and has really put it to good use. So you want to go to their website, henryeng.com. You want to bookmark that, because as engineers, there's all kinds of ways that Henry Engineering can save you time, trouble, and money. So check it out, henryeng.com. And of course, you can get all the products from Henry Engineering from Broadcasters General Store. These are my good friends. You're going to love these folks if you get to know them. And one of the ways that people, that they like to do business, because it's good for us, give them a call. Sure, you can order online. You can send them an email. But if you call them at 352-622-7700, you're going to get a really friendly person who knows a lot about the broadcast industry and knows what other engineers are purchasing these days. And let me tell you, the folks at BGS, I work for one of their vendors. I work for Telos Alliance, and we are talking to them all the time. We go to see them in person a couple times a year to bring them up to date on the latest technology, make sure that they're well-trained on our products. And I know other manufacturers, other vendors do the same thing as well. So they are always up to date on our tech, certainly, and tech of other companies like Henry Engineering. Thanks a lot to Broadcasters General Store for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is with us, and so is Sasha Ludwig. Chris, I wonder if you had any comments on where the conversation had gone so far, and we're going to go into security shortly. But Chris, you got anything you want to ask at this moment?
No, not ask as much as just again, with radio being the way it is and here in the States, there's been a real slow adoption of virtualization. I think there's we're finally getting to the point where we're bringing IT ideas into broadcast, but for the longest time, we kind of fought that. We're just now starting to do virtualization. We use AWS for what we're doing, but we really have just started dipping our toes in. But we also have a good kind of a group to do that with, in that we're all kind of centrally located. We use the same infrastructure in all the places, in all of our facilities. So it lends itself a little bit more to doing virtualization. But you guys really hit it on the head with getting the horsepower on a machine to do multiple things. We for a long time had a computer that just did metadata, a computer that just did processing logs, that kind of thing. And, you have all of those computers with, really inefficient power supplies, these big boxes taking up space, one rack unit server now with redundant supplies, and we can run all of that stuff on one machine all the time. And then we just have a second one that's a standby, that's a backup. So I do think that it makes a lot of sense. It's just that we're so slow to adopt these things. You know, heck, we didn't even have computers in studios until probably, you know, 20 years ago. Before that, the only computer you'd find was in the controller's office. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with now is, you know, with virtualization is we're finally coming around to that. It's just taken a long, long time to do it.
All right. So Sasha, you mentioned to me that you've got some experience with IT security because you've been an IT administrator, admin for a while. How do you allow access to the right people and keep bad people and bad software and malware out of your systems? What are some of your go-to techniques?
So I guess the first thing that everyone is thinking about is firewalling all the stuff. So you just basically block everything from the outside to your internal studio. But also, I talked about that topic earlier a little bit, separating all the stuff. So if you have a machine, for example, that does metadata or something, or just renders out the video for some podcast, or just uploads stuff to your podcast account or something like this, then you only should allow this specific application and only those ports that the software needs. So you are quite a lot more safe against attacks and something like this. You should always have a backup. So and you should always do a media break between the backups. So if you have backup like a short-term backup on hard disks or something like this, really try to have a media break somewhere. So for example, some crypto trojans or something like this couldn't easily encrypt your hard drives. So you can just pull out the backup and say, haha, okay, now we just restore from the backup from like 2 hours ago or from yesterday, and we're good to go anytime. So that's something that also plays into the department of IT security. And also, you should monitor all your stuff. So if you have, for example, a service that is supposed to behave like this and that, then you should install monitoring tools that assure every time that this service is behaving the right way and not doing something nasty or something wrong. And if you have monitoring in place, you really know it much, much before it's going to be a problem. So you can see, oh, this service is kind of weird now, or it uses much more memory than it should use, and something like this. So if you have good monitoring in place, that's half the part of the security.
This is pretty interesting to me. If you could spend a little more time about talking about monitoring tools, are we monitoring processes on an individual PC or server, or are we looking at network tools that monitor the flow of data on a network, or are you really talking about both of these kind of ideas?
I'm talking about all of the above. Really should check if the on the CPU level, you should check if there's the usual things like overheating. Maybe the cooling system was a bit off, or what else could be that there's dust in the fans or something like this. So you should monitor your from the fan speed over to the CPU temperature, to the networking bandwidth. If you know you have 2,000 simultaneous listeners on a stream, then they should roughly make about this and that on bandwidth. Then you should really have an eye on this, but not manually, but automatically. So with rules set in place that will go off an alarm or tell you, okay, something's not in the designed parameter range here. You should have a look at this. So this is something you should do from the CPU level down to like the application level. So just an easy example, if you have a web server, you should always check if it responds with a HTTP 200 and if the right content is on the web page. And it could be like just checking if there's hello, welcome to our radio station, if this text is present on the web page. So it This could be an indicator if something is wrong, if this part is missing on your page. So yeah, and all the way in between, from monitoring audio levels, distortion levels, true peak levels, something like this, everywhere something can go wrong, you want to install monitoring so you don't have to worry about it and don't need to manually have a checklist like, okay, is my level right? Is this right today? And yeah, so you just want a nice overview with a software that can tell you, okay, here's something weird, here's something out of band, here's something off. So, and yeah, I think there are much more monitoring solutions out there for other stuff, like for RF monitoring. So I guess Alex has stuff over there. I think you mentioned him earlier.
Because yeah, that's right. Yeah. Hey, I want to ask both of you, Chris, speaking of this idea of monitoring, I didn't even know that this was part of the deal, but a couple days ago, we got an email. We, some of our radio stations, me and my business partner, Larry, we got an email, rather urgent one, from our Playout vendor, Playout One. And they said, hey, we just noticed some interesting activity on one of your servers, that there were 10 file changes, audio file changes, on your server within 60 seconds. And so just to make sure that's okay, they did something to temporarily take that offline, because their Playout systems will, you know, they go ahead and the individual workstations download what they need for a while. And they contacted us to see, are you guys doing something weird? And we didn't know. We did some investigation, couldn't find anything wrong. They reinstated it. Looks like everything's okay. Maybe we just had, you know, several program downloads at once or something like that. But I was surprised and very pleased that the Playout One software was monitoring this kind of thing for us. Chris, Tara, I wonder if you do a lot of SNMP. Are there other kinds of monitoring that you do to look for funny activity on your computers?
Oh, sure. You know, we do network monitoring, not only monitoring on our network, you know, just the network itself, but also at the firewall level, to check to see if there's any, you know, unwanted traffic or increases in traffic that we're not expecting, you know, or, you know, larger than normal. And just like, you know, with the server, our firewalls will shut everything down if it exceeds a certain threshold of activity. So there's that. We also have monitoring of our Playout machines. If there is unusual internet traffic, or not internet traffic, but web traffic going back and forth. And we also, you know, isolate all of our machines. So, you know, the ability for something to get into the Playout system is pretty rare. We use, you know, there's scrubbing machines that take the content and only transfer certain types of files between our network and the automation network. So, yeah, I mean, with SNMP, you can monitor all that stuff. You know, you can monitor fan speed, you can monitor CPUs, you can monitor networking traffic, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you're right. It's really important to really have a good, we even have network tuners that have SNMP, and I can check and make sure that phase and everything else, you know, of the audio is correct. So, it's so important to get that overview of the health of your radio stations, because especially nowadays with people that aren't, you know, aren't in the building, you just don't know. And, we were just talking about that, before the show with, you know, the stations that we have off the air, the ability to know out of band, you know, if the remote control system goes down, how do we know? Well, I have tuners that scan all of our stations in each market. So the remote control doesn't call. I'll get an alert that, you know, there's no audio or there's no RF on that channel. Mm-hmm. And so I'll get a different alert that way. So, you know, to not only have the monitoring, but backups to that monitoring in case something happens.
Which tuners are you liking to put to that use to check your stations for you?
I use the Inovonix site streamers. They work out really, really well. And not only that, but with you know, the fact that we have, you know, we're not centrally located as a group. We have people all over the state. I can check in on, you know, our station in Eau Claire, 300 miles away. I can sit here and listen to it and make sure that everything's okay, the processing's right, you know, there's nothing going on. So we have those in each of our markets that scan all of our stations constantly. And we can also go in and manually tune in the stations as well.
Good deal. Sasha, you were talking about monitoring apps and service and so forth. What about monitoring the stations themselves? So, you know, on the air or the station streams. What tools do you like to use for that function?
So the main tool I use for all the ingress of the monitoring data is Zabbix. ZABBIX, I think. So this is the visualization software for most of my monitoring setups, and it's getting like Chris said, from SNMP or from small services and service checks and something like this. And monitoring the RF way, I think it's in Germany that's not so common to do. With a service or something like this, so I have seen all those national radio stations. They have dedicated departments that are doing this actually. So I guess Chris Hartman. I don't know if he sold any one of his awesome units to some of the German radio stations. I'm not aware of anyone. So I haven't seen one of those over here. And also, as I said earlier, Germany is not so big, and we don't have this thing where you have hundreds of radio stations in different markets and something like this. So it's more a local thing. And if you can receive the radio station in an area of about, 200, 300 kilometers, then it's quite a large range. So it's half of Germany almost. So those are only a few stations that have this big transmitter network that have multiple transmitters and something like this. So yeah, it's not so common here in Germany to do a automatic monitoring of the RF part.
Well, hey, I just got the best tip, I think, for the whole show. I looked up this Zabbix software. Oh, my goodness, this is pretty powerful stuff. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and people can check that out if they're interested. So many things it will monitor for you. And I'm sure there's other packages, too, but this looks really good, open source. Hey, we got to take our last break real quick. Chris Tarr is here to tell us about something fabulous from Angry Audio. Chris? Floor is yours.
Well, I'm going to go. Thank you very much. I'm going to go first to the Audio Chameleon, just because there's been a lot of discussion about that, especially on Facebook. They're selling like hotcakes, and people have been talking a lot about the Chameleon, especially the C-level for on-air stuff. And one of the conversations we got into today is control. And the reason I bring that up is there's really no control on the C-level. There is just basically a three-position switch that determines the density of the audio processing. And somebody was mentioning, I want to wait for the controls like that to be able to, you know, tweak all of this. And, you know, I used to feel that way until I tried a Chameleon, and all of a sudden you think about, it makes sense that there isn't, because you put the Chameleon as supposed to be behind an audio processor. You want to let the audio processor do the work. The Chameleon basically massages that audio and gets it to the point with consistency where you can do the audio tweaking, the bass, the high end. You can do all of that stuff on your nice processor, on the processor that follows the Chameleon. So Corny has come up with this artificial intelligence that constantly monitors the audio going through the box, adjusts the levels, and makes it so consistent that you can get it right into that slot where it sounds really good on the air. So it's actually a feature, not a bug, to have very little control on that Chameleon. So I recommend, as Mike Dosh likes to say, there's no trials, but there is a money back guarantee. So if after 30 days you don't like it, send it back. But definitely So far, every person who's tried it has loved it. I've heard nothing but good things about the Audio Chameleon, and you can use it for your headphones, you can use it for your stream, and you've got the sea level now that you can use on the air. That's just one of many things that Angry Audio has. They are a solution provider. All of these little things, these day-to-day bugs that we've got, that we have to deal with, these little problems in the studio, Angry Audio has a solution. The headphone gizmo is fantastic, where you can actually unplug your headphones. It's a magnetic connection, and you can plug your headphones into it, and then you plug the other side into your console, and if you walk away, it disconnects. The headphone disconnector. It is amazing how that works. Just one of the many solutions that Angry Audio has come up with to solve problems. So when you're, you know, working on the studio and you're getting frustrated and things are just not going the way that you want them to do, don't get frustrated. Get angry. Go to angryaudio.com and take a look at the solutions they've come up with for broadcasters. Just a lot of studio lights, mic gizmos to mute microphones, tally lights, interfaces to match your audio. If you want to think about it, they've got it at angryaudio.com.
Thanks so much, Chris. Appreciate it. And thanks to Angry Audio for sponsoring our show. Also, big thanks to Max Connect Wireless. Here is someone to tell you about it.
I'm Gary Morrow, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
And I'm so glad to have this thing handy because we kept WEVL on the air in Memphis, Tennessee for a weekend plus while Comcast was thinking around trying to figure out what their problem was. And so thanks a lot, Max Connect Wireless. Appreciate your service. Yep. And appreciate Josh Bone making this work really well. Max Connect.
You know what? We just bought three more.
Really?
This week. Yeah, we were running into a situation with our sports broadcasting where we were using little hotspots to get our Comrex accesses on the air, and they just weren't cutting it because, you know, the service wasn't good. It wasn't prioritized. It was shared with everybody else. You know, no real antennas to it. So, you know, you get those cradle point boxes with that prioritized data, solved our problem.
That is amazing. A few years ago when Max Connect, they had been going for a while, but we tried to do a live broadcast from an SBE national convention, a video broadcast, and I was using my T-Mobile phone as the hotspot, and it was showing, you know, I don't know, 25, 30 megs down, 15 megs up. Looked like it should have worked great. We had a lot of dropouts. And we hooked up the Max Connect box, which was only showing us about 4.5 or 5 megabits up and down. So slower measured speed. But I'm telling you, it appeared to us that every packet was getting through. It looked great. Despite the reported slower speed, it was reliable. And that's what made the difference for us. So thanks, Chris. Good to hear of your good experience there, too. Hey, we got to wrap it up in a second. Sasha, I want to give you a last word. If you've got a tip, an idea that you'd like to leave our listeners with, please let us know. What would you like to leave our listeners knowing?
When it comes to IT security, always think about that if I can control this and that from my phone, who else can also control this? So yeah, just keep that in mind and always ask yourself what can you do to interfere with that?
Yeah, to make it well, not that it has to be hard for you, but it's got to be secure. It's got to be secure. And yes, if it's too easy, well, maybe you should scratch your head and say, I wonder about this. Chris Tarr, you got any last minute words for us here?
Yeah, along with what Sasha was just saying, two-factor authentication. Turn it on. Just about everything has it now. Even our VPNs require two-factor authentication through our phone. So, and try to do two-factor authentication through an app versus SMS. Because that can be, you know, phone numbers can be cloned and actors can get a hold of a clone phone number and get those SMS messages for two-factor authentication. So turn it on and use the app.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Trust us on that one.
That's right. All righty. Thanks a lot. Sasha Ludwig from Germany. Thank you for being us with Astra Studio. I appreciate you staying up so late. It's past midnight where you are. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chris Tarr, it's not midnight where you are, but we appreciate you getting out of bed and feeling good enough to do the show.
It's great to be here.
Well, glad to have you back. I hope to have you back next week if you can. In fact, next week, John Bissett is our guest next week. He's going to have a great year-end wrap-up from his Workbench column in Radio World magazine. So John's always fun to have on, and he always has some surprisingly good advice. So he spends his whole life collecting all these good ideas from engineers around the country and around the world. Thanks a lot to Suncast for switching today's show and producing it. Appreciate it very much. And thanks to you for watching This Week in Radio Tech. We hope to see you back next week. Take care.